This feature has been brought to you by Slot Foundation, which needs your support to continue projects like these. Information on this recording and access to other recordings is available online at slot.org.
This paper seeks to examine Arakawa and Ginz's concept of biotopology from the perspective of contemporary cognitive science. It does so through the intermediary concept of phase space, a form of geometry used to model mathematically complex processes in chemistry and physics. Cognitive scientists such as Francesco Varela and Jean Petitot have begun to deploy phase space diagrams to model cognitive processes as well. We will see that Arakawa and Ginz describe biotopology in a way that resonates profoundly with how phase space models complex processes in physics, chemistry, and cognitive science. Furthermore, their descriptions of biotopology and their enactions through an array of architectural practices may well inform how cognitive science may proceed to investigate and model with even greater sophistication sensory and proprioceptive cognition. In an earlier essay on Arakawa and Ginz's previous book, Architectural Body, I attempted to describe the interactive domain of perceptual imagining and dimensionalizing landing sites. A perceptual landing site and an imagining landing site can be described as, quote, a simultaneous hybrid construction of a strong foreground coupling and a weak background coupling, with the zone where these two cognitive processes occur called a dimensionalizing landing site. I was struck by the visualization of these two dimensions and self-deprecatingly referred to a moment when I broke my nose against an almost invisible glass portal. I recognized that Arakawa and Ginz would require recourse to n dimensions in order to model the many levels of cognitive engagement required to fully envision landing sites, much as if describing complex processes in physics, chemistry, or cognitive science. I explained it by recourse to the following metaphor. Arakawa and Ginz accomplished for complex cognitive causality a distinction as important as that between an event cone and a phase space diagram in accounting for complex causality in physics. I'd like to use the occasion of this paper to explain what I meant by this. Arakawa and Ginz come to rely on the hybrid term biotopology in their recent volume, Making Dying Illegal. I find confirmation from my earlier intuition because by coming up with with a term implying a geometry of cognitive complexity, I argue that they seek to model a natural phenomenology for the architectural body engaged in architectural procedures within architectural surrounds. Biotopology and phase space. Here I would like to ask you to remember Dorothea Olkowski's fine exposition of topology here. Transcendental forms outside of time. Yet biological forms can only exist in time. So we have here a terminological junction framing a chiasm into which the term phase space will be poured. Here I draw not only on scientific deployments of phase space, but on Gilles Deleuze's ontology of phase space as well. Both Manuel Delanda and I have written earlier on this. I have written elsewhere on Deleuze's phase space in terms of Francisco Varela's natural phenomenology of affect, through which I've attempted to explain the embodied and distributed nature of cognition in a range of aesthetic contexts, as early as Duchamp's art, Eduardo Katz's telepresence events, Smith's paper sculptures of viscera, and the embodied as well as distributed cognition of jazz improvisation, a form of collective cognitive activity which includes the embodied proprioceptive and sensory processes of those engaged in improvisation. I therefore intend to extend my application of the natural phenomenology of affect to an understanding of biotopology through the deployment of the metaphor of phase space, not to aestheticize Arakawa and Ginz, but to demonstrate their rigor, skipping work on cognition and jazz improvisation. I attempt to describe this consensual domain of shared pathways among living, breathing human musicians by reference to phase space, a phase space already employed by cognitive scientists to describe complex cognitive processes. Now, in contemporary cognitive science and phenomenology, Jean Petitot refers to this as the explanatory gap between cognitive behavioral data and subjective experiential meaning, the black box that the field of naturalizing phenomenology seeks to make transparent. What if one could actually describe actual pathways and actual gestures and embodied actions of real human beings in architectural surroundings in four or more dimensions? Now, in my earlier essay in the collection Anthropos, I refer to the history of the bicycle rider metaphor used as earlier by Polanyi and in Mark Johnson and in Manuel de Landa. But my main interest in that was to critique that a genealogy by reference to top-down and bottom-up processes of cognition. For now, I don't want to just talk about visual cues that dominate the bicycle rider's emergent sensory and proprioceptive inputs to maintain balance and trajectory, however, and I'm skipping that discussion, in order to maintain balance and trajectory, we see complex coordinates for all the senses, as well as muscles, sinews, nerves, and so forth. In their most recent work, Making Dying Illegal, Arakawa and Ginz move beyond the tension between top-down visual cognition and bottom-up sensory and proprioceptive cognition, as in negotiating landscapes or architectural surrounds in their account of the complexities in the representation of embodied cognition. Here is a passage spoken by an unknown first-person narrator from an introduction to elementary biotautology. Last night, I ate in a restaurant that I often frequent. I ordered the fish of the day. Oh, here's the bicycle passage. Which, to my delight, appeared in front of me within 15 minutes. I was famished, and I wanted the food into me as quickly as possible. I dove in and didn't want to stop to think until I was halfway through. The fish didn't taste quite right. I should have stopped eating it as soon as I noticed this. Instead, I plowed along nonstop. I was about to wipe my plate clean when suddenly I began shivering in fear. The poisonous fish I had just eaten was going to kill me. This hit me incredibly hard. I felt throughout my entire body that I was going to die then and there. I, of course, quickly recognized that this was an experience that needed further looking into and that merited a biotopological report. Well, before we present a full biotopological report on this, notice that we find, for the olfactory sense of smell, the same implied distinction made between the perceptual landing site, the fish before the speaker, the imagining landing site, the memory of past experiences with the same or similar fish dishes in the same restaurant, which then form a dimensional landing site of cognitive dissonance. This dissonance becomes generated by the lack of attention on the immediate sensory input, rotten fish, provided by the perceptual landing site because of the feelings of hunger and the emotional expectation of satisfaction projected onto the imagining landing site, past favorable fish platters. Here we begin to see the complexity by which Arakawa and Ginz force us to recognize the innumerable axes of complexity at play at every embodied cognitive event. So let us now begin to address how an understanding of biotopology in terms of the mathematics of phase space not only help us understand the rigor of Arakawa and Ginz's conception, but how that rigorous conception might contribute to contemporary cognitive science and its attempts to model cognitive processes. Biotopology defined. Since the term biotopology occurs throughout Making Dying Illegal, even with reference to their architectural procedures, specifically number 3, biotopological open code procedure, number 4, biotopological scale juggling procedure, number 17, organism that person's biotopological procedure, it might be useful to show how Arakawa and Ginz define biotopology before we compare it to phase space and then apply the analogy of phase space to new directions to cognitive science and proprioceptive affect. On page 61, Arakawa and Ginz define biotopology as the art-science emphasis studying closely related but notably different degrees of emphasis. By degrees of emphasis, one could suggestively employ the words embedded tendencies within a system, for Arakawa and Ginz go on to say that biotopology seeks to be as inclusive as possible with reference to the history of that system. The system, of course, is an architectural surround involving multiple organisms that persons under the conditions of a biosclave. What is inclusive includes the possible futures for that behavior of that organism, that persons, and that surrounds. Possible futures of which are only possibly, only partially possible to predict. Think of elementary biotopology as being as much a meadow of knowing as a field of study, and a meadow as broad as the day, and a knowing that has within it plenty of room for not knowing. By rejecting an arboreal construction for this biotopology as a field of knowledge, and by acknowledging that knowing through its system is much contingent upon the circumstances of sacrificing certainty for a certain circumstantial level of abstraction, Arakawa and Ginz embrace a form of epistemology centered on statistical modeling rather than precision. This is because biotopology can take into account the projected behavior of multiple subjectivities, multiple subject positions within a biosclave in theorizing construction and adaptation of an architectural surround. Its subject matter wraps around you or around the referent of any member of your available suite of pronouns and would-be pronouns and counts as you or one or another of these reference and follows you or such reference whenever you or they go. Drawn up contingently from moment to moment and able to account for the position of each subjectivity, biotopology looks dimly and abstractly into the future for each subjectivity as far as humanly possible. Biotopology introduces a world of approximative measurement whose basic measure is the architectural body, which by definition is, in actuality, is approximative. Now, to say that biotopology is both approximate and an abstraction doesn't mean it embraces a typical form of reductionism such as exemplified by the calculus. Quote, living as an architectural body involves a roundabout way of pinning down, but not pinning down, that which is in play, an organism that persons who lives as one stands a fair chance of escaping many of the conceptual pitfalls, particularly those born of an unconscious move towards reductionism that commonly plague theorists and researchers. By recognizing what it does not see as well as what it does see, biotopology avoids the arrogance of the Foucauldian knowledge power configuration that makes minority positions untenable, such as how in classical physics and engineering, reversible systems make irreversible processes invisible and insidious at the same time. So, biotopology seeks a form of rigor in the maximum flexibility with its grappling with reality. At the heart of biotopology's methodology, quote, lie approximative, rigorous abstractions, and underlying all biotopological description are the pair of terms cleaving and bioscleave, which are rigorously and approximately hold the places, respectively, for the firm attaching of one segment of mass energy to another, and the equally firm separating of such segments from each other, and the biosphere in the dynamic throes of omnipresent cleaving. Given the abstract space of biotopology, we have two distinct terms governing its functions and properties. First, cleaving involves contrary tendencies of bifurcations and mergings or aggregations of bodies and energy. Second, biosleeve describes the immanent field or biosphere through which bifurcations and aggregations occur. This is the dramatistic scene, as Kenneth Burke would have it, for the architectural body and its architectural surrounds. Within biotopology's lexicon, approximative, rigorous abstractions predominate and basically run the show. These terms can, with a considerable amount of accuracy, mark and hold places for vague things or events. Here we have a large claim. Through biotopology, Arakawa and Ginz claim to have invented a form of n-dimensional geometry that can account for the body's engagement on many levels with the natural world and its architectural surrounds, and in ways that are so vague that even the field of architecture has yet to find a language to describe it. While I will show you how much the language of biotopology resonates with the properties of phase-based diagrams as they are currently becoming deployed in contemporary cognitive science, let me point to a passage where they try to distance themselves from too facile an analogy between what they are doing and the use of phase-based in the modeling of complex processes, say, in thermodynamics. Whereas regular topology looks at similarities between boundary conditions, biotopology does away with a discrete object and thus with boundary conditions altogether. Although biotopology refuses to accept the traditional view that the epidermis of an organism that persons constitutes its boundary with the world, it does recognize that there are crossover zones and differences between organizational levels of the event fabric on the one side of the epidermis within the body proper, and on the other, the atmospheric component of the architectural body. While there are boundary conditions in pure mathematics, such as topology, the boundary conditions here could refer to the desirable impossibility of a closed system implicit in the design of an internal combustion engine, for which the measurement of heat loss phase space diagrams were first employed practically. But now we see that biotopology is meant to refer to skin, muscles, sinews, nerves, what is known as proprioceptive as well as sensory cognition from the five senses, every possible element of which is represented by a dimension in biotopology, and some of which is quite capable of reaching into the architectural surround beyond the epidermis. But before we make clear this leap from n-dimensional analysis to embodied cognition, let's trace the route from phase space through thermodynamics and physics proper and complex systems, generally speaking, to a natural phenomenology through the figure of Francisco Varela back to Arakawa and Ginz. Phase space, from physics to cognitive science. Phase space diagrams are visual models designed to solve the problem of representing complex systems where the possible origins and futures are too numerous to map through traditional methods. Originating in the work of Poincaré, the Gibson-Einstein ensemble theory offered a geometry of points corresponding to a range of contingently possible futures in the history of system, of a system from one moment to the next. Phase-space diagrams map an accumulation of a set of points representing a range of vicinities that are irreducible to the matrix of the horizontal of space and the vertical of time. This irreducible set of points describes the concept of ensembles in phase space, which become employed to describe the large-scale behavior of complex systems, which are incapable of being mapped in precisely deterministic ways because of the inherent role that contingency plays in the behavior of these systems. When there is a range of possible outcomes in the time for the behavior of a system, there is a greater need to represent graphically that range rather than the actual location and trajectory of every individual element contained by the system itself. The amorphous shapes in two dimensions that emerge simply represent the range of futures at that instant. Here, the topological features remain trivial. If we deal with one axis, we have two dimensions. If we deal with two axes, then the shapes take on topological features with volume in three dimensions. Three axes provide topological structures in four dimensions, n axes, n dimensions, and n-dimensional resultant topologies. Incidentally, n-dimensional topology constitutes the actual topics of graduate theses in mathematical fields. The explanatory power of phase-space diagrams has been nothing less than spectacular. I'm going to have to skip through this really quickly. It can map the trajectories of pendulums, the contrast between pressure and volume in a heat engine, the evolution of phase space of a cell undergoing Brownian motion, the bromine ion concentration in the Embelichsov-Zavodtinsky reaction, which is one of the simplest self-organizing processes, the state of insect population starvation mapped by levels of certain chemicals, and here you see an implied volume because there's two axes rather than one here. The simple cascading bifurcation cleaving diagrams in the history of systems, larvar clustering, and here here's a cascading bifurcation diagram. Here's a phase-space modeling of larva clustering. Even musicians were using phase-space diagrams to map the use of the concept of noise in composing practices. Here's a two-dimensional creation of a topological form in just showing the range of possible futures for movement of gas through time, with T being the present, T1 being a future moment in time, T2 being a further future mon. Here's the typical evolution of phase space of a cell corresponding to a mixing system. Here's another map of a John Cage score. However, it's with the application of phase space to new directions in emergent and distributed cognition and what John Petitot and Francisco Varela and others call naturalizing phenomenology that we can see more precisely the value of the metaphor of phase space to understanding the explanatory power of biotopology to Arakawa and Ginz's project. And I'm almost done. In the Principles of Biological Autonomy, Francisco Varela begins to experiment with boundary math in his attempts to connect primitive schematic anticipations of phase space and cognitive processes, beginning with diagrammatics of the calculus indications, the calculus of indications that John D. Keane talked about earlier, to model recursivities in a range of interactions, cognitive interactions, and finally modeling systems and subsystems to show recursion and cognitive looping. In his classic essay on the specious present, Varela deploys several different forms of diagrams to represent cognitive processes, and some of them authentic phase-based diagrams, including the topology of a synchrony involving the turning of a head. And here we have an actual space days diagram used by generated by a laboratory in an attempt to model with several axes saddle instabilities in a time series for an implanted epileptic patient experiencing a seizure represented in Poincaré sections. And in the last diagram here, here we have a 10-second period in what's called the fourfold structure of nowness that he describes in the specious present. This last diagram is not a phase-based diagram, but covers that 10-second gap within which occurs the cognitive looping that I think Arakawa and Ginz make visible in really interesting ways by talking about the interactions of the perceptual imagining and dimensioning landing sites. Now, all these many people, including a guy that I know who also does work in Deleuze, who used to work with Varela and is now working with who's that guy in Iowa? Damasio. And they've actually been doing a lot of work on using phase-based diagrams in mapping proprioceptive and cognitive processes in terms of brain function. All these diagrams are primitive compared to what's being proposed by Arakawa and Ginz in their biotopology and the range of their architectural procedures. But to go into any detail, we'll have to be left for a much longer version of this. But if I could just refer back to the bicycle rider that I talked to in my first article, Polanyi's bicycle rider, or Manuel de Landa's 10-dimensional bicycle rider, or my daughter Annie, some of you who know who work in Arakawa and Ginz's office, now that she's 24 and not 6. And list every single dimension of every sensory and proprioceptive input imaginable that enabled Annie to remain balanced as she propelled herself on a trajectory through a reasonably level landscape on two wheels. Plot those dimensions in phase space. Now, transfer that image to that of Arakawa and Ginz's architectural body and an architectural surrounds, projecting contingently perceptual imaging onto dimensionalizing landing sites as that architectural body flows through architectural surrounds. Now multiply that image by the number of senses as implied by the restaurant passage referred to earlier and by the myriad proprioceptive sources for muscles, sinews, and nerves. N-dimensional axes for n-dimensional inputs. That is biotopology modeled in phase space. At any given instant, the accumulated set of points takes on topological form as an approximative, rigorous abstraction, albeit a fleeting, transitory one, as the organism, that person, flows smoothly to another and another set in the pure contingent duration of the world, unless, of course, we wish to stop and make a biotopological report. So, thank you.